As was already mentioned this morning, we have several visitors with us. We are really thankful that you are here. We do hope and pray that you have seen how much we try at least to glorify God. We're so thankful that we have the opportunity to be here and to praise His name and offer glory and thanks to Him for what a great, what an awesome God that He is. It's our intent to meet again this evening at 5 o'clock, and we'd love to have you back at that opportunity as well, if you can. And in addition to that, after the service this evening, and this is for the congregation and for all the visitors, if you would like to, there is a gathering where we will all be getting together to share a meal. We have a little hot dog cookout. It'll be at our house in the house of Harold Gillespie immediately after our evening services this evening. And if you would like to join us in that, we would love to have you. You don't need to bring anything except your person, or maybe a chair or two if you'd like to sit on. And if you would like any more information about that, just look for anybody with the wrong side. Look for anybody wearing a name tag this morning. They should be able to help you with any information you may desire regarding that gathering that we're having this evening. We had mentioned that we were having a lesson that was entitled this morning, God and Gargoyles, and I've had a lot of feedback about that already and trying to figure out where is it that we're going with this and what's the direction, what's the idea of all of this, and I actually read an article that was based on modern gargoyles, about a year ago or half a year ago, that kind of primed my thinking along this direction. And so I'd like to share with you some thoughts about this morning. I know it seems like a strange title, but I would tell you it is a very real concept and something that we need to think about as we seek to serve God in this modern day America that we find ourselves in. Don't know how much you even know about gargoyles. I know you've probably seen them. I was asking about the function of them the other day, and Judy said she thought they were so that in movies you'd have something to push off of the roof toward people that were standing down underneath the doorway, because we've seen that happen quite frequently. She knew that wasn't really the function, but it's the kind of thing that we've seen. But we've probably all seen gargoyles on some kind of building, whether it has been in a movie or it's been in pictures, or maybe you've actually seen these kinds of structures somewhere. They're kind of an interesting background, not even absolutely known for sure, but there's a great deal of legend that is associated with them. Most believe that they came from the legend where Saint Romanus, as he was called at least, who was later made bishop of Rouen, the country that he saved in about 641 A.D., supposedly at least, that he saved this. And I say supposedly because if you understand the rest of the story, you understand why it's more of a legend than it is a factual situation. What he did was he saved the country of Rouen from a creature called Gargouille. And Gargoyle was a dragon, like most any other dragon. He had bat-like wings, similar to that picture that we just saw there of the gargoyle. He could breathe fire out of his nose and out of his mouth, could fly, and had brought quite a bit of destruction to the area, according to the legend, until Saint Romanus was the one who rid the country of this dragon. He was burned, according to all the different accounts. There's different accounts as to how he was killed, but he was brought back to Rouen, and he was burned. The dragon was burned. But there was a problem in that process. As they burned him, the head and the neck would not burn on this dragon because the dragon had tempered his body by his own flames. The fact that he could breathe fire had tempered the entire part of his head and his neck, and it wouldn't burn. And so they mounted the head on the building. Even though the dragon was dead, it wouldn't burn. So they mounted the head on the building, kind of like a warning sign to let other dragons or other evil spirits understand the nature of what had been done. And so they were viewed in a couple of different ways. They were used, gargoyles were used to convey messages. And they were used to convey messages the way that the early religious people did, especially during the medieval times. They were used to convey messages because overwhelmingly the people were illiterate. They could not read. And so you couldn't convey a message by giving somebody a written message in a country or even a continent that was virtually illiterate. Nobody could read. So they would use pictures or structures in order to get a message across. And gargoyles were used to convey messages. They were intended to convey messages of a couple of different types. They were always representative of evil. And they would use them to do a couple of different things. They would mount them on buildings, and it was always kind of strange. I don't know if you've ever thought about the concept of it at all or not. But most gargoyles that were put on buildings were put on buildings that were dedicated to the worship of God, which always just seemed kind of like a strange thing. In other words, that what they did was said, we have built an idol, if you will, or a figure that we're going to mount on the building to ward off evil spirits from the building that they supposed that God housed himself in on a regular basis. I always thought that was kind of interesting, that if God was there, like they thought he was there, that you would need the gargoyles to ward off the evil spirits. But they did that, and then they also used them to scare people into going to church. That was the other intent. As you would look up there, it was kind of a message of telling you, understand, these evil spirits are all in the air, and they are all out there, and they can certainly influence or take over your life. You need to be coming to church. Those were the two main drives behind what they were doing, but they were always representative of evil, and sometimes a particular kind of evil. As you go back and you look at the gargoyles, some of them may have a very hog-like face, which was a representation of the evil of gluttony. And they would show different faces on these different gargoyles, but always a representation of evil and the idea of warding off the evil spirits. And so I think what happens is gargoyles were a way of just making us feel a little bit more comfortable, or making them feel a little bit more comfortable by hedging their bets in terms of personal security. It was just like a little bit of an added protection. And so the kind of the idea of, you'd say, well, we don't really do that today, do we? But think about the concept of a nation that says, in God we trust, but wherein people will regularly, when things are going very good, will say, knock on wood. See, in God we trust, but knock on wood. That's the concept of a gargoyle. That's the concept of saying, you know what, I've got my trust in God, but I want to hedge my bet a little bit. I want to look for something else wherein I can get a little bit of security. It's why when you would be driving in this country, you may see numerous cars that have either mounted on the dashboard or hanging from the mirror something like a figure of a St. Christopher or a St. Christopher's medal, which is intended to protect the occupants or the travelers therein. That's just a concept. It's saying, it's not that I don't trust in God, but I've got some other good luck charms that I associate with that. Things that I would like to say, you know what, I'm just kind of taking that little extra level of protection. It is why even well-educated people will do things like searching their horoscopes or seeking the advice of a psychic. It's never completely eradicated. That concept, there's just always something in us that wants to make us feel a little bit more comfortable than we might otherwise. It's why even when you look biblically, you see stories like Rachel. You remember, as you think about the wife of Jacob and don't know if you remember the story or not, but she stole the idol from her father's household just to get a little extra protection. It wasn't that she didn't believe, but just a little bit extra protection. Or it's the same kind of thing that even while Moses was up on the mount conversing with God Almighty, that the people of Israel were down at the base of the mountain building a golden calf and bowing down before a golden calf. It's the concept of, it isn't that we don't believe, they trembled. Israel trembled when they heard the voice of God and the mountain shaking. But you know what? Moses was a little slow getting back down. We just want to hedge our bets a little bit. We just want to make sure that we are protected. And so what happens is we find out biblically, God talks about the foolishness of that in Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 6. He says, "They are full of superstitions from the east. They practice divination like the Philistines and clasp hands with the pagans." I love that description that Isaiah uses. He says they clasp hands with the pagans. That's the nature of a gargoyle. You know, and that sounds a little tough, a little cruel to us, but the concept is just this. All Isaiah is saying is, you know what? They're trying to hold on to God and trying to hold on to the world at the same time. They're clasping hands with the world. That they find themselves joined. You know what? It's not that I don't believe in God, but I feel a little more comfortable as I think about this relationship that I have with the things around me as well and the areas that I'm looking for security. In Isaiah 44, verse 16, this is a great description. Isaiah is describing somebody cutting down a tree. And you have to just love this description and the irony that's in this description and even the little bit of sarcasm that seems to be in this as Isaiah is describing it. He says, you know, this guy cuts down a tree and he burns part of the tree to roast his meat and keep himself warm. And he says, oh, man, that fire feels good. Can't you just get that picture? I mean, that's a very logical thing. He cuts down the tree. And he takes part of the tree and he puts it in the fire and he cooks his meal with it and he puts his hands around the fire and just, oh man, that feels so good. That feels warm. And then Isaiah says, then he takes what's left and he makes his God, a carved idol. He falls down in front of it, worshiping and praying to it. Rescue me, he says. You are my God. Isn't that a great description? He says, I just want you to think, and this is what God's going to help us to understand, I think, in this passage. When we think about the nature of gargoyles, and we think about the gargoyles for us today, the question is, who do you trust? Where is your trust really placed? What is it that you are focusing on? What is it that you have said, you know what, all my security, all my real feeling of good comes right from this one place and only this one place. The psalmist says in Psalm 135, they have mouths, talking about these idols. They have mouths, but they don't speak. They have eyes, but they do not see. They have ears, but they do not hear, nor is there any breath in their mouths. Those who make them, now here's the key. Those who make them become like them, so do all who trust in them. And then again in Psalm 91, those who live in the shelter of the Most High will find rest in the shadow of the Almighty. This I declare about the Lord. He alone is my refuge, my place of safety. He is my God. I trust in Him. Here's the real comparison that exists in the Psalms. God's going to be talking about helping us to make a comparison. Where it is that we're going to place our trust. He says there are those that trust in their idols. There are those that trust in God. You're going to have to make a choice between those two things. And so the point is really this. And I think this is what he's trying to get us to understand in these Psalms. The point is that you cannot put your trust in anything of our own making. That's what it's going to boil down to. It's going to boil down to you can't put your trust in anything that man has devised or made. You can't. How can you possibly trust something that clearly must be inferior to the one who made it? That's what he's saying. You can't make anything greater than yourself. No matter what man does, he can't make anything greater than himself. Even the greatest supercomputers, the computer that just recently won Jeopardy against the human players, it still doesn't make any difference who put all the information into the computer. Man can't create a computer that can devise information that man can't give it. That's just the nature of, and God saying, this is a gargoyle. It's anything that man has devised or thought up or made that takes the place of God. He says you can't put your trust in that position. And so we ask the question, so what are the gargoyles then in which we put our trust? What idols do we depend on to save us in times of crisis? What do we depend on to fend against hard times and adverse circumstances? Where is it that we put our trust? Where are we in danger of slipping in to this mindset? The psalmist in the 121st Psalm, that says Psalm 91, but that's not correct. It's Psalm 121. In the 121st Psalm, he says, I lift up my eyes to the hills. From where does my help come? Sometimes you look at that psalm and you think the psalmist is saying, I'm looking to the hills from where my help comes. That's not what he's saying. He's saying, in other words, it's almost like a picture of a battle. And the psalmist, because that's where the help would normally come from. That's where the reinforcements. And he says, I look to the hills. Where is my help going to come from? It isn't coming from the hills. His help's not going to come from those that are a part of his army, those that are a part of his backup, even though that may be the direction he looks. He goes on to say, my help comes from the Lord, who made the heaven and the earth. He says we have to understand those songs that we just sang about the greatness of God and how God is such a protection for us. Or the psalm that Ben read in our hearing, Psalm 46, just a moment ago. The psalmist says, God is my refuge and my strength. It's only in God that I can trust to have the strength to endure and overcome in this world. He says, don't seek to hedge your bets. So much so that in verse 10 of that psalm, he quotes God and says, be still. Just stop. Stop the anxiety. Stop the worrying. Cease striving, he says. The psalmist just understands sometimes there's a turmoil in us. And he says, you know what? You've got to just stop striving. And what? And know that I am God, he says. He says, Just be still so you can see something and know that it's only God that can provide what we need. Now, God himself didn't promise us that we'd have no turmoil, no danger in life. He didn't promise us that we would have all things easy or that we would have all things healthy. But he says, know this. Know that I am God, and there is nowhere else that you can trust to get your strength from. He says, be still, cease striving. And yet, we're in a country and in a day and age where we wrestle with some of these concepts. What are our modern gargoyles? I just want to hit three of them for you, but there's certainly others you could put there as well. But these are things that we see even happening biblically. as far as the gargoyles that they suffered with. One,
our government,
its power, our military strength, its laws, its protection, whatever it is that you want to look at. That's no different than the Israelites did. The Israelites worshipped God, but trusted in the fortification of their cities. Do we ever do that? We ever worship God, but feel the comfort because of the fortification of those who physically protect us? I'm not saying that God is not involved in those things as well, but I'm saying He says you need to be careful. Don't put your trust in the wrong things. The fortified walls and cities that the Israelites trusted in crumbled around them at some point, and their government failed, and they were defeated in battle, and they were taken captive. Don't think that we're immune to that. I mean, I hope that's not the case. But we sometimes just act like if the Lord is still around, I mean, it allows us to still be around as a general creation, people in general. We think if that goes on another 100 or 200 or 300 years, we almost just feel like, you know what, the United States of America will still be around too. God's saying, don't trust in your country. Trust in God. It can't be in the strength of your country. In Isaiah chapter 31, verse 1, this is what the prophet recorded for Israel. What sorrow awaits those who look to Egypt for help, trusting their horses, their chariots, their charioteers, and depending on the strength of human armies, instead of looking to the Lord, the Holy One of Israel. The Israelites, they wanted the horses and the chariots. They wanted an army that was powerful, that seemed like it could defeat those around them, and they put their trust in the wrong thing. The psalmist also says, some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we will remember the name of the Lord our God in Psalm 20. It says, don't trust in the wrong thing. Sometimes we put our trust in man, in government, in the things around us that appear to be secure. God says they don't have the same security that He has. Secondly, our jobs, the money they produce, the ability to buy things that they produce, the job security that we have worked so hard to make sure that we have, the kinds of things that we kind of put around us that seem to protect us, the bank accounts that we build up, the pensions that we put trust in for the years to come, the insurance policies that we buy. God's not saying it's wrong to do those things. He's saying it's wrong to trust those things. Money and security in money, as secure as it seems and as protective as it seems, does not provide that to us. Proverbs 11 says, he who trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like foliage. The psalmist says in the 49th Psalm, you can't buy eternal life, is what he's telling us. He says, those who trust in their wealth, those who trust in the multitude of their riches, none of them by any means can redeem his brother, nor give to God a ransom for him, that he should continue to live eternally and not see the pit. God tells us also that as secure as those things seem, and certainly we should understand that in this society these days, should we not? People who had large sums of money, who lost large sums of money in the things that have happened financially in our country. Or as you watch your own money as it's fleeting, as things change, and maybe you live in a house that was worth one price 2 years ago that's worth an entirely different price now, and you've watched your money fly out the window. God says, money gets wings. And we understand that. He says there's no security. Don't think that if you stay at work longer and work harder that you're going to gain security that really means security. I'm not telling you not to provide for your family. God says you're worse than an infidel if you won't provide for your family. But there have been those that have put so much time and effort into their security and into their work and into their job that they've lost the things that really matter. God says that the security is not there that you think. It doesn't always do what you think that it will do. And then finally, don't put your trust in yourself. In your own heart, in your own understanding, in your own righteousness. Somehow we feel secure. We've talked about that in a collective fashion before. Sometimes we feel secure with God as His people collectively because we think, you know what, we're doing the right things. God says, if your security is because of what you're doing, man, you're just not on the right track. You're just thinking the wrong way. He's not telling you don't need to do the right things. He's just saying it's not what secures you. Even when we do our best, even when we're working as hard as we can, He says we never will achieve the point to where we've earned anything. He says, don't put your trust there. But sometimes based on what we know of His Word or what we think we're doing with His Word. In Proverbs, Solomon writes, "He who is of a proud heart stirs up strife, but he who trusts in the Lord will be prospered. But he who trusts in his own heart is a fool. Whoever walks wisely will be delivered." Again, in Proverbs 3, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding." You're going to have to trust God, not trusting oneself. Do you remember in Luke chapter 18, two men going up to pray before God? He says, we have to be so careful. I know we read that and we think, I would never be that arrogant before God like that Pharisee was. But all that Pharisee was saying is, God, I thank you that I'm not doing what the rest of the world is doing. Do you not feel that way sometimes? I mean, I'm thankful. I'm thankful that I'm not out doing what some people are doing. Aren't you? I mean, there are people that are wasting their lives and destroying other people's lives. I'm thankful I'm not doing that. He says, but be careful. Because it's not a very large step to get from I'm just thankful that that's not where I am. In other words, to take the position that says, there but for the grace of God go I. That's me walking down the street. If it wasn't for the grace of God, I could be exactly in that person's shoes. It's not a very large step to go from there to like this Pharisee did, and you just get a little bit too thankful, a little bit too proud, a little bit too trusting. I know God, I know you love me, and I know you're with me because of what I'm doing for you. He says, you can't do that. That's exactly what that Pharisee did. He says, God, I thank you that I'm not like these other men. They're extortioners. I'm not an extortioner. They're unjust. They're adulterers. And then look what he says. He says, you know what? I fast twice a week. He's just laying out. He's not making this up. It's not like he's lying to God. He's just saying, this is who I am. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess. Surely, God, you must find me approved. God says, wow. Where does trust come from? And what was it in? He trusted himself. God says, you can't put your trust in yourself. And that's easy to do. It's easy to do in a country and in a time that is so focused on self. That is so humanistic in its thinking that we become the center of our own universe. God says you can't do that. The problem, and then the lesson's yours. The problem is it shrinks our view of God and His infinite power. When I think that it takes a little bit of good luck, when I think I need some kind of charm to accomplish that, when I think that it's going to be my job that saves me and provides for me, when I think that it is our government that is providing me my security, or when I think it is me and my life providing my security, I've stolen a little bit away from God. Because it's God that is my refuge. It's God that is my safety. It's God that is my security. That doesn't negate what he's asking us to do. It's just telling us, be careful where you place your trust. Sometimes we place our trust in the wrong thing. Whatever is not of God is a gargoyle. Anything else that slips in that place, any place that takes our trust, that's a modern day gargoyle. It's just a little something that we use. It's not that we've taken our belief of God completely away. It's just that we have hedged our bets a little bit. And we get like Israel. We worship our God, but we trust in our fortifications. He says, you can't do that. Be still. Just stop the striving and know that I am God. That's great advice. We need to understand it will never be my greatness or goodness. It'll never be the power of the United States of America, no matter how powerful they are. It'll never be my job, my pension, my bank account. None of that will ever be my security in life. It can only be my God, because that's the only security that matters. Do I go home eternally? Because none of the other things can redeem me, but my God can take me home. If you're not a Christian, God would love for you to be a part of his family. He wants to adopt you in and tells us in his word exactly how we can go about that. If we can help you understand that, talk to us. We'd love to share it with you. If you already know and already want to respond, that would be great. For those of us that are Christians, I can just tell you this is an ongoing battle in life to never allow anything to slip ahead of where it belongs and take a little bit of the focus and attention away from God. May we strive hard to keep God absolutely first and foremost in our minds, in our words, and in our actions. If we can help you today respond to God's call, let us know while we stand, while we sing.